It was the sound more than the sight that made his gorge rise. The dry gurgle, the clack of his teeth, the strain of the rope and clink of his wrist irons as he thrashed at the end of the noose, all of it amplified 100 times by the clever cuts of the stone. It was the sound that splashed cold water across his insides. He froze there on the rooftop, staring across the endless mass of bodies at the gallows shuddering on the top step. He was too late. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off. Amatha and Elias watch from above as Hatham makes his slow walk to the executioner's noose. Meanwhile, Lee's attempt to rescue the brawler kind of falls apart when he falls off a building. If you missed last episode or any part of the story, I will have a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, along with a couple of recap videos just to give you a sense of where we are in the story. I hope you enjoy this episode. I had an absolute blast writing and recording it, which is a little twisted, you'll see what I mean. All right, that is enough out of me. I will catch you at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. Lee came too slowly, the way a man does after a night deep in his cups, the world taking shape by degrees. His head was pounding, his whole body ached, especially his ribs. He wasn't sure, but by the wet in his breeches, he thought he might have pissed himself. He cracked his eyes and saw gray sky overhead, so they hadn't arrested him, or just not yet. Maybe the keeper had gone for extra hands to drag him back to the jail. Maybe they were on their way now, and any second he'd hear that awful clank of armored footsteps. How long had he been out? He heard a snuffling sound close by, too close for Lee's comfort, and a crackle of breaking straw. He eased himself up onto his elbows, wincing at the bite of too many splinters from the old crates he'd smashed to flinders when he fell. Something warm and bristly brushed against his side. It was a piglet. Mottled pink and black, it was the approximate size and shape of a loaf of bread, and it met the thief's gaze with big, inquisitive brown eyes before inching a bit closer to his face. He felt another brush against his calf and saw that there were two more piglets squirming around his ankles. He offered his hand to the one up by his chest, and it scuttled away with speed belied by its ungainly shape. Admittedly, Lee had never spent much time around livestock, but he guessed that these couldn't have been more than a few weeks old. "Come on," he murmured to the skittish piglet, teasing it with a bit of straw he'd plucked out of the mud. His head was still throbbing, and he wasn't sure he'd be able to stand. "Come on, I'm not gonna eat you." A snort from the other side of the pen slapped his senses back into him. It was lower and rougher and angrier, and Lee felt his heart sink. She was covered in mud from snout to tail, with thick black bristles that stuck out like wires from her face. He hadn't noticed her before amid the old crates and debris, but as the black sow squared on him, her dugs scraping the muddy floor, her snout mean and crumpled and oozing snot, Lee's stomach clenched. "Oh, shit." She ran at him snarling, and Lee dove out of her way, taking care to avoid the piglets now squealing around his ankles. Her gait was awkward and ungainly, and her momentum sent her crashing through the pile of smashed crates as Lee scrambled to his feet. It would have almost been funny if the sow hadn't weighed at least twice what the thief did, spurred on by motherly instinct and with a bite that could chop through bone. He lunged across the pen before the sow could disentangle herself from the crates, his bare feet skidding along the muddy cobbles. The wooden fence was old and rotting, and it sagged beneath the thief's weight. If the black sow had some momentum behind her, he didn't doubt that she could smash clean through the barrier. He glanced back from the top of the fence and saw her coming at him again like a black battering ram. He more fell off the back of the fence than climbed down, and none too soon. The fence shuddered and cracked as the sow threw her weight against it. Her trotters clicked against the stone as she retreated for another charge. He didn't wait to find out if the fence would hold. The serrated hook was dragging behind him, and he coiled the rope around his waist before hooking it onto his belt. He wasn't familiar with this particular cluster of alleys, but he'd lived at the edge long enough to be able to recover his bearings without much trouble. He found a landmark he recognized between the rooftops, the north cargo lifts at the outer edge of Cliffside, and started in the opposite direction, toward the river. As it turned out, he didn't need to go as far as the Jaxum, for he broke onto a wider avenue that told him where he was after only a few streets. Lee frowned. There was no one on the street, not few as there'd been before, no one. He glanced up, hoping to spot a sliver of sun between the heavy gray clouds, but it could as easily have been vespers as morning. The same thought came to mind. How long was he out? Fear clenched his stomach in a vice grip. He turned and ran west, away from the keep, squatting above the falls and toward the sanctuary square. His plan was abandoned. He didn't know what he'd do once he got there, but his desperation lent him wings, and the all-too-real image that surfaced in his mind of Hatham purpling at the end of the noose drove him onward. He only half looked out for keepers. What more could they do to him? He was three streets over from the square when he saw the crowd. They were packed shoulder to shoulder with hardly enough room to breathe, let alone for the thief to squeeze through. He saw the long sticks of the pastry sellers swaying over their heads, sprinkling powdered sugar into the hair of everyone nearby. He'd never make it. He wiped his hands on his breeches and reached for the drain pipe at the mouth of a nearby alley. It was easier going on the roof, and Lee sprang across the alleys over the heads of the low folk like a passing raven. He could hear the crowd now, cheering and singing. But it wasn't until he crested the last rooftop, severely startling the picnickers thereon, that he heard the brawler. It was the sound more than the sight that made his gorge rise. He was on the far side of the square, and from here Hatham was barely more than a featureless blot, not quite the size of his little finger. But it was the sound. The dry gurgle, the clack of his teeth, the strain of the rope and clink of his wrist irons as he thrashed at the end of the noose, all of it amplified 100 times by the clever cuts of the stone. It was the sound that splashed cold water across his insides. He froze there on the rooftop, staring across the endless mass of bodies at the gallows shuddering on the top step. He was too late. Amitha's jaw was clenched so tight she thought her teeth would break. It didn't matter how long she'd been steeling herself for this, how many times in recent days she'd forced herself to picture him up there so that she wouldn't be undone by it. The real thing was worse. She looked away at the crowd. Their faces were red and rapturous and shining with lust as they howled and sang. At the balcony, in the far corner, one of the nobles had hiked up his filly's skirts. Both of them turned so they could keep watching. At Elias, he was flushed and sweating, his eyes wide and bloodshot, his knuckles white around the railing. She didn't have to look, but she couldn't escape the sound. The jeering crowd, Blackbird's gasps, the creak of the long arm, her own pulse thudding in her ears. She remembered the words of an old song, and she caught herself singing it under her breath, if only to drown out the noise. It had at one time been a staple of her trooping days, when the right sort of crowd was the right sort of drunk for a teary ballad about a maiden, a lover, a war. It had given her a strange sort of pleasure then, knowing that she could have even the roughest miners and farmhands sniffling after the first verse and sobbing openly by the end. Ever I'll walk by the light in your window, as gray fortune takes me wherever she will. For e'en as I go, I should look back and know, my lover doth wait for me still. Her voice was quavering and unsure as she mouthed the old familiar words, like slipping into an ancient and well-worn cloak. She hadn't meant for him to hear, but Elias pried his gaze off the steps and glared at her with venom. Why are you singing? Her throat was tight, and with effort she met his red-rimmed gaze. Elias, please, she heard herself say. You don't have to do this. Oh, what I do, he whispered back. His lips hardly moved. You don't. I can see it on your face. He didn't look like the rest. His expression as he watched the steps had been one of revulsion thinly veiled by tight-lipped determination. He wasn't enjoying it. You can stop this. You can stop it right now. This isn't who you are. This isn't the Elias I... She caught herself and looked away. That got his attention.
You what? The Elias you what?
The Elias I loved. Her stomach lurched. She saw some faint trace of that old familiar softness on his hard marble features. She kept going.
I've known you for half my life. I told you that day at the Mass, I don't think you're a bad man. I still don't. After everything, I still don't.
She laid her hand over his. It was like clutching ice.
I think you're lost. I think there's something in you that died on the night Haytham...
A muscle in his jaw twitched, and she avoided saying it.
He came back. So can you. So can you. I believe that.
She was crying. Whether it was to sell what she was saying, or because of the desperation of the moment, or because she genuinely believed what she was telling him, she didn't pause to try and discern. It was effective. He turned his hand over so that her palm was in his.
What can I do, Em? He won't stop coming. Should I just cut him loose and let him do it again? Forgive and forgive and forgive until the day I slip and he cuts my throat. Or do I leave him to rot in a cell for the next 30 years?
His voice was bitter and accusing.
Tell me what I should do.
She tried to pull away from him. He squeezed her hand in his so that she couldn't move. She shot a worried look at Baron Kingmaker, who was studying Amatha and Elias over his third glass of champagne. He stood up and moved to intercept them.
Look at me, Elias spat.
She did.
You can think I'm a monster, but every crime on the Archpriest's card is a choice he made.
He released her hand, and she pulled it to her chest, rubbing her wrist. He jabbed a finger at the steps.
I couldn't stop it if I wanted to. This isn't about me or some vendetta. It is the hand of God holding up that noose. You want someone to cut Haytham down? Take it up with him.
He stepped away from the balcony and nearly bumped into the Baron, who just managed to squeeze between the nobles and servants behind him. Elias ignored him.
And while you're there, he told Am, you can ask why he's in the habit of pardoning guilty men while he leaves innocents to be raped in their beds.
He retreated toward the glass doors, and the Baron stepped in to fill the space he'd left, his eyebrows raised. The amplified creak of the gallows was suddenly all she could hear. Her stomach knotted. She thought she'd be sick again. She muttered an excuse to the gray man and chased White Rose to the glass doors. She didn't see the servant holding the champagne tray as she weaved between the clusters of bodies on the balcony, and his elbow knocked the wind out of her. He managed to avoid slopping champagne all over the nobles who'd been pecking at his tray, but he succeeded in soaking himself and Amatha, as well as smashing a dozen glasses on the floor. She fell, cutting her palms to ribbons on the broken glass. She hardly heard the servant's spluttered apologies as two of the nobles helped her to her feet. Everyone was looking at her now. She didn't care.
Elias!
He disappeared through the glass doors. She untangled herself from the porters clucking over her and ran after him. She put a hand on his shoulder.
Elias, I'm begging you.
Her voice was small and desperate, her vision blurred with tears.
What do you want? What can I do?
He looked back. She took her hand away. It left a crimson blot on his sleeve. It was a long moment before he spoke.
I wanted you to choose me,
he breathed. He took a step toward her. The wine on his breath and on her dress was overpowering.
You think you could do that? Go back and choose me?
She knew he was mocking her, but his voice was sincere.
No.
His jaw twitched.
Then quit whinging and get out of my face.
He made as if to pull away. She reached for him, blood on her fingertips. He grabbed her wrist.
Put a hand on me again, and you'll lose it.
He went. She stood in the doorway, feeling the damp soak through her clothes and the blood pattering off her fingertips, and watched him go. The gray man sidled up next to her and laid a reassuring hand on her arm.
Best to let him go, lady.
He gave her a towel from one of the porters. Amatha first dabbed her cheeks, then squeezed it between her hands to stanch the bleeding.
Why don't I have my carriage take you home?
The Baron said.
You've had quite enough excitement for one day.
I'm not going anywhere.
She wouldn't leave him. She could still feel the rest of the balcony staring at her as she moved into a gap on the railing, bits of glass crunching underfoot. She ignored them. She forced herself to look at him, his features so dark a purple they were almost black, the veins in his temples bulging like ropes. He was still twitching, but he'd stopped fighting. She was out of recourse, save one. Cirrus. She didn't know where to start. She had neither the heart nor the time for a lengthy preamble, and she'd never been taught a prayer for pleading for intercession from death by judicial hanging.
Mercy,
she whispered. It was all she knew to ask for. She wasn't sure which of the fourfold faces she was addressing, but it didn't matter. She'd take whoever was listening.
Mercy. I don't know how, but you can. Mercy. Please. Please.
The roar of the crowd swelled. They'd begun chanting again. Blood for blood. Blood for blood. If Cirrus said anything back, she didn't hear him over the crowd. Lee squeezed, shoved, and crawled his way through the crowd to the double line of gray cloaks at the foot of the steps. He'd gotten as near to the platform as he could along the rooftops before dropping onto the balcony, giving quite the fright to the party of nobles among whom he landed, and then into the throng. He didn't have a plan. He'd left his plan with his boots in the launderer's cart. What he had was a coring knife in his belt that by rights should have spiked his ass when he fell into the pig pen, and a sky's weight of guilt on his shoulders. He was 20 paces from the steps, the grim-faced keepers looming head and shoulders above the crowd. The creak of the rope and the rattle of his wrist iron sent a wave of goose flesh coursing down Lee's arms. What had from the rooftop been only a ruddy blot, he now saw in gruesome detail. The veins in his throat swollen and throbbing, broken capillaries spiderwebbing below eyes that had no whites. Those were the devil's eyes, black pupils on a crimson field. Shouts and curses rang out around him as he shoved through the crowd. He could hardly hear them above the chants for blood. Someone snatched a fistful of his tunic and held him back. Lee didn't hesitate. He spun on his heel and smashed his fist into the man's mouth, slicing his knuckles on his teeth. Blood spurted between his fingers. Someone screamed. The man staggered but didn't fall. The crowd was too tight-pressed for that. Already Lee was disappearing into the crowd, with more bodies instantly filling the gap he'd left like water in a channel. The gray cloaks saw him coming. The nearest ones adjusted their grip on their cudgels as the gap between them narrowed. Lee kept coming. His eyes were trained on the old priest standing near the wooden steps at the edge of the platform, his lips moving in a soundless prayer. He had only one move left. It had been his original plan after he'd read about it while he was poring over building records and old judgments in the library, before he'd fallen in with Travers. But without Kingmaker, Lee didn't have even a sliver of a chance of getting an audience with the archpriest, let alone of talking him into turning Red Ugly loose. But there he was. If he could just get to him. Father! The old man frowned vaguely in his direction, still muttering his prayer. Lee waved between the keepers, one of whom had planted an armored hand firmly on the thief's chest. Father! Anything else he shouted was lost to the roar of the crowd. The priest didn't come down, but he glanced over his shoulder at the small cluster of novices behind the platform and nodded in Lee's direction. One of them peeled off from the group, passing his censer to one of the others, and scurried down the steps. He was hardly any older than Lee was, with a greasy face and a fat nose covered in pustules. His eyes were teary and bloodshot, and Lee caught a strong whiff of garlic as he drew up alongside Lee opposite the line of keepers.
What can I do for... I need to talk to the priest.
The novice blinked. He glanced up at the old man on the platform, who had turned his attention back to the proceedings.
I'm afraid that's not possible. The mass is at Vespers, and midnight today. If you need to speak to someone, it'll be too late. I need to speak to him now. Please!
The novice cleared his throat and crossed his arms.
Anything you'd care to say to His Eminence, you can say to Clemency.
The word buffeted the novice as if he'd read it from a spellbook. Lee said it again.
I need to ask for clemency.
The novice's lower lip quivered, his mouth slightly agape. Even a full Black Hand didn't have the authority to so much as hear an appeal for clemency, let alone pass down a decision. That responsibility fell squarely and exclusively on the shoulders of the Archpriest. Lee had sifted through 2 7-year worth of judgments during Hatham's trial, hunting for any bits of legal slight to keep the brawler off the block. It was rare, and seemingly reserved for nobles and well-connected merchants, but in certain cases the church might step in to amend the magistrate's ruling. Instead of death, a convict might be sentenced to 7 years in the iron mines north of Haven, or to live out his days in prayerful solitude in a remote mountain monastery. It wasn't quite freedom, but it was better than death. The novice excused himself and crept up the steps to talk to the priest. The old man's face was grave. Lee couldn't hear what they said over the crowd, but he could tell before the boy came back down that their exchange hadn't gone in his favor. The novice's greasy face was triumphant.
"His Eminence says that there's nothing he can do. An appeal for clemency has to come from the prisoner himself. How's he supposed to ask when they've had him chained in a cell since the arrest? His Eminence says that there's nothing he can..." "Who bows to whom? The keep or the church?"
He didn't have an answer. He excused himself again and scuttled up the steps. This time, the old man was waiting for him at the edge of the platform. Lee watched their pantomime, his heart sinking. Of course, he wouldn't go for it. There were too many political considerations the old man needed to make. What did it matter if one low-born brawler had to die, or 10 or 100, if it meant staying in the good graces and deep pockets of the High Lords? Lee blinked in surprise. The old man was coming down, leaning heavily on the novice as he navigated the wooden steps. There was blood on his hem, the thief noticed, and he left a trail of scarlet footprints all the way down to the double line of keepers. The archpriest's voice was grave but gentle.
"You ask to see me, son?"
Lee said the magic word again. The old man's jaw tightened minutely.
"Typically, that's a man's own responsibility to plead for clemency. Not his..."
He motioned to the thief, his white eyebrows raised.
"Brother,"
Lee croaked. The priest's eyes flicked up to his dark hair, sweat pasted to his brow.
"But the church can step in, can't she? You've changed judgments before, even after the trial."
The old man silenced him with a wave of his gloved hand, but not before Lee added,
"The book calls for mercy, doesn't it?"
"Even if I could..."
The archpriest began, and Lee knew he was lost.
"Even if I could, and this is to say nothing of whether the people wouldn't flood the steps and tear him to pieces, it has happened,"
he added as Lee opened his mouth to reply.
"Who's to say your brother even wants clemency? Could it not be that the reason why he hasn't appealed is because he's accepted his fate? Would not the best way to honor your brother be to accept it yourself?"
The old man's face was kind. He motioned to the Greycloaks to let Lee pass, and they reluctantly parted so that the thief could stumble through. The priest placed his gloved hand on Lee's shoulder, and with his other he motioned to the brawler swaying at the end of the rope.
"I've overseen scores of these,"
he murmured. Even from a foot away, Lee could barely hear him.
"It's nearly over. He's almost through. If you want to help your brother, don't worry about the body. Do something for his soul."
The old man closed his eyes and began to pray. Lee didn't hear any of the words. His mind was racing. He still had his knife. It was an easy trade, red ugly for the archpriest. There were plenty of cracks and crenels they could hide in, and Lee had ways out of the city that the Greycloaks wouldn't know to watch. But how would they even get there? There were 30 keepers within striking distance of the thief, to say nothing of the 10,000 low folk just beyond. Even if the Greycloaks didn't shoot him for fear of striking the old man, the crowd might not have the same restraint. And then what? Flee down an alley with the old man limping and the brawler barely able to keep his feet? Maybe they could run through the doors into the sanctuary, but Lee didn't fancy his chances of fending off scores of Black Hands with nothing but his coring knife.
"May thy will be known and done,"
the old man was saying. It wasn't a chance, it was a sliver of a prayer. and if it went anything less than perfectly, he'd never see the inside of a noose. The mob would tear him to shreds. But it was all he had left. He swallowed hard against the stone in his throat and reached for the knife. He never got it out of his waistband. There was a sudden thunderclap at the top of the steps, and both Lee and the old man jumped. The thick rope knotted behind the brawler's head snapped like a broken lute string. The long arm rocked on its post with the sudden loss of its charge as the brawler fell in a heap on the top step. He spilled down the huge stone steps and stopped halfway between the platform and the crowd.
"That's impossible,"
the archpriest breathed, his hand over his mouth. A strangled cry tore unbidden from Lee's throat, and he lurched toward the brawler. Someone shouted behind him, but he didn't hear it. He barely tried to avoid the keeper, who sprang up the steps and smashed into Lee at the knees, and they both went cartwheeling down the steps. Two more Greycloaks threw themselves on top of the thief and dragged him away with Lee clawing at the stone. His vision blurring with tears, Lee saw Hatham arch back on his knees. His black, bloody fingernails clawed for purchase under the rope. They carved furrows in his neck that wept crimson down his chest. He tore the noose away and took in a huge, wheezing breath. He bellowed, a hoarse bass note that rolled like thunder across the silent crowd. The noose had left an awful black collar around his neck, veins bulging as he roared into the sky. The crowd roared back. Lee couldn't tell if they were on his side, but he didn't care. Didn't care that he himself could hardly breathe with the gray cloak kneeling on his back. Didn't care that he'd lost his boots and his gold and nearly been eaten by the black sow. He didn't care. Hatham lived, and that was enough. The guards on the platform were rushing down the steps. The hangman considered the brawler from the front edge of the platform, then hopped down onto the uppermost slab, landing lightly on his feet like a cat. His serrated blade was a lifeless gray when he drew it. The archpriest threw up a hand.
"Stop! Look out!"
Lee shouted at the same time. He could barely hear himself. Hatham had risen shakily to his feet. He was weeping openly, his mouth stretched in a bloody, broken grin. There were scattered shouts from the crowd to watch out, to turn around. He was still grinning when they ran him through. Amitha threw herself at the railing and nearly went over the side.
"No!"
She didn't see the tip of the blade as it sprouted from the center of his chest like a thorn. It was the way his smile froze on his face that told her he'd done it. And then the blood. Just a trickle at first, but as the executioner unsheathed his dripping blade, the tiny red blot spread and gushed down Hatham's belly. The brawler swayed there for a second like a man in his cups, then his knees cracked down on the step. He didn't flinch. The headsman moved with a twisted sort of practiced grace. He tossed the sword with a flick of his wrist and caught it with the grip reversed, flecking the steps with blood. He drew his hand over Blackbird's brow and tipped his head back toward a deaf heaven. Amitha didn't dare look away. Her stomach roiled. Elias had come back and was similarly pressed to the railing with the gray man between them, but Am didn't notice anything. The blade's teeth slid through his blackened neck like it was made of soft cheese. More blood splashed down his chest, down his legs and groin, pooling on the steps. The headsman worked methodically, the muscles in his arms standing out like ropes as his blade found bone. He wrenched the head left, then right, still more blood spraying across the steps and the closest keepers, and then he was through. His sword clattered onto the ground as he ascended the steps. The gray cloak scrambled out of the way. His jerkin was splattered with blood, and his arm was drenched to the elbow. He stepped onto the platform, found the resonant spot near the center, held Blackbird's severed head up for the crowd to see.
"Femeriel!"
he boomed.
"Femeriel!"
they thundered back. It was all too much. Am vomited twice over the railing, then fainted.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much for listening. This is quite the cliffhanger to be leaving the story on, but I hope that you will come back next Monday for the next episode. In the meantime, you can do me a favor by leaving a like or a comment on the video, or if you're listening on podcast, you can leave a 5-star review and share this story with a friend. All right, that's enough out of me. I will catch you all next week.